Morning, everyone. Today's daf in Yevamos is daf Sadi Gimel. We're back on Sadi Beis. Actually, very bottom line of Sadi Alpha Mid Beis. And we just finished a discussion yesterday in the Gemara regarding a woman's ability to return back to her original husband. Her husband went away, lost, gone, didn't know what happened to him. She hears reports about his death. So most of our discussion though, over the past week has been, she heard a report from one man. One man gave her a report. One man, one woman. Edus Isha. So gives a report that the husband's dead. And then what is she to do from that point going forward? And then we had a discussion. Yes, the answer is yes. Maybe Mishnah spelled that already. Maybe not. Yeah. You'll see. Okay, that's been most of our discussion. What if two come back and tell her that her husband's dead? So the Mishnah made a statement in the name of Rabbi Shimon. The Mishnah said that if two come back and say that her husband's dead, so not only is she allowed to remarry. If one comes back and says her husband's dead, so she's allowed to remarry, but with serious consequences if in fact her husband comes back. If two come back and say that her husband's dead, so that's Edus, that's normal testimony, she can remarry. What if her husband comes back even after two said that her husband died? So obviously the reports of his death were slightly exaggerated. So what if the husband comes back? So the Mishnah says she can go back to her husband. What about the fact that she was with another man? So that's Anusa. That's how Rashi described it back in the Mishnah. That's the simple pshat in the Mishnah. She's an Anusa. What else was she supposed to do? She had two witnesses. And yesterday's Daf Sadi Aleph, spent a good amount of time discussing whether or not that's the halacha. The Mishnah says that's a halacha, Rav says that's a halacha, but the Gemara at the very tail end of the discussion showed a reluctance to actually Lamaisa go through with that conclusion that she can go back to her original husband. Take a look at the Shulchan Aruch, take a look at the Rambam, and they too also show a reluctance that she can go back to her husband. To the question that I got a lot of yesterday, what else was she supposed to do? So I know it's a good question. The Gemara asked it five times yesterday. it's got to be, if the Gemara is asking it five times, it's got to be a good question. But the Gemara says, okay, but still, it's her husband's back and she was with another man. And so Gemara does in fact show a reluctance in terms of poskening that she can go back to her original husband.
This happened.
At
a wedding.
Made happen.
She remarried and years later, she needed this wedding.
Yeah.
Now what?
Yeah.
What about the children? What about everything?
Okay, I understand. It's a serious. I get it. It's a very serious issue. I'm there. Amar Avashi
l'kala l'chayish. She had gone to the deen and got their sanction. Would
that help? No, I mean, I'm saying two witnesses. Anyway, the two witnesses would have testified in front of somebody, in front of the Beis Din. The Mishnah keeps using the phrase she doesn't need Beis Din. Meaning she doesn't need a special act of Beis Din. But she'll go through the normal channels of Beis Din. Okay, let's move on. I'm not going to make anyone happy, so that's fine. That's not my job. That's not my paid position. My paid position is to get through the Gemara and to keep up with the Daf. So under those circumstances, I'm also not doing my job. So all things considered, let's go on. Sadi Aleph Amid Beis. We're three lines from the bottom of the Amud. Amar Ravashi Lakala Chayshin. So Ravashi says, what about coal? What about rumors? Not the first time in the Masechta we talked about rumors. Now obviously, if rumors circulating, they shouldn't be circulating. Who should be speaking Lashon Hara? None of us should be speaking Lashon Hara. Good. That's our Musa for the day. But the Gemara says, but we also know, we learned earlier in the Masechta, that sometimes you take rumors seriously, meaning even though there's an Isra of Lashon Hara, no one should be saying Lashon Hara, but if rumors are circulating, you can't just simply ignore rumors. Rumors do have a certain halachic validity. And the Gemara over here wonders, L'kala Chayshina and Haikala Yilema. Haikala. The Gemara says, exactly, even as you're asking the question, what exactly are you asking? You know, first of all, the Gemara, if you take a look at Rashi over here, Rashi says she gets married because of Beis Din, and afterwards, rumors started circulating that her husband, in fact, is alive. just happens not to be here. So the Gemara says, "Ilei makala labasa nisu and ha'amri Ravashi chadizim nadamri Ravashi on the top of Sadi Beis Amad Aleph kol kala labasa nisu and lachayshinan." So the Gemara says, first of all, we know any rumors that start circulating after she gets married to another man, and all they are just rumors. There's no facts. There's nothing to substantiate those rumors. They're just rumors. So we know the halacha is that those rumors get ignored, right? For example, says Rashi, take a look at the top Rashi in Sadi Beis Amad Aleph. Kagon, kohen shenasi isha v'acharkach yatzal la'kol. A kohen marries a woman, and afterwards the rumor starts circulating that she is a grusha, she's a zona. None of this was reported before the marriage, so the Gemara says, so they're just rumors, we ignore that. Okay, good. Rumors are not going to upset a marriage if the rumors start circulating after the marriage. So the Gemara says, so over here also, what happened? Witnesses came and reported their husband's dead. Witness or witnesses, either way. Report that her husband's dead. She goes and gets married. Now, after she gets married, now rumors start circulating, hey, he's not dead, he's alive. So the Gemara says, if the rumors started circulating after she gets married, we ignore them. They have no halachic validity. So to which the Gemara says, no, ma'u detei ma'ho v'asai le'beidina v'sherinun kekala dekam nisuin dami v'titzar kamash malan. Gemara says, no, I'll tell you what. It's a chiddush. It's not a frivolous point, because look, it's true she got married, but right now she got married and it's very tenuous, because she got married. Let's bring the case back to where it was one witness who testified that her husband's dead. Okay, her now new marriage is not built on a sound foundation. It's not that she was at the burial, she was at the funeral, right? In other words, it's her husband's dead, but only on account of one person. And now that she, after she got married, rumors start circulating that he's alive, the Havamina would have been, it's kekala dekami nisuin dami. It's like the rumors started before she got married. Meaning, obviously, they started after she got married, but the fact of the matter is that this marriage is so tenuous and it's built on such a faulty foundation where only one witness came and testified that her husband's dead, I might have thought these are rumors that we do not take so lightly, that we would take them more seriously. And therefore, maybe, the Havamina, maybe the marriage should be terminated based on these rumors, even though these rumors started after she got married. Kamash Malan, the Gemara says, that's a Chiddush. The Chiddush is that even though this marriage is not built on the strongest foundation, her husband's dead, but we only know that because of one witness, but nevertheless, if there is a halachic permit for her to get married, so then the marriage is treated like a strong marriage, and that we're not going to listen to rumors after she got married. Nisus I'll be based in tape say Amar Ziri Laisla Masisim Nini Bay Midrasha. Okay. We get to speak a little bit now about carbon. The Mishnah spoke about it. Let's go back to the Mishnah. Let's just review the Mishnah. We're going all the way back to Pei Zayin Amad Beis, the first Mishnah of the 10th Perek. And the Mishnah, after presenting all the things that happened to her if her husband in fact comes back, then the Mishnah talks about her requirement to bring a carbon. We know that anytime a man or a woman violates an iser chatas, right? And if done b'shogeg, if done inadvertently, so then she has to bring a carbon. Here she has to bring a carbon. So the Mishnah goes on to say that im nisa shelo b'rishus mutar sachzor lo. No, I didn't want to read that line of the Mishnah. Nisa sabi basin takes a peturim in a carbon. If let's say basin gives her the permit to get married, so she is going and her husband comes back, meaning there was only one witness. So now she's going to have to leave both men, as the Mishnah already established, and peturim min hakarbon. She's going to be exempt from having to bring a carbon. Why is she exempt from having to bring a carbon? Meaning inadvertently she slept with another man. Doesn't she have to bring a carbon? And the answer is that if you do something, because Beis Din gives you an allowance to do something, so then you don't have to bring a carbon. That's the basic rule. When you do something because of your own mistake, you have to bring a carbon. You woke up in the morning, you didn't think it was Shabbos, you woke up on Sunday, you thought it was Sunday, you were all confused, and you went and you started your morning by doing malacha because you thought it was Sunday, so you have to bring a carbon. That's not a Beis Din mistake, that's a you mistake. So you have to bring a carbon. But if Beis Din came out with a ruling and Beis Din said, a terrible example will be, and now I say it's a terrible example because I know the Gemara coming up, but I'm going to give a terrible example right now. Let's see Beis Din rules comes up. You wake up in the morning and the paper's delivered and Beis Din issues the ruling, today's Sunday. that's the ruling of Beis Din. Okay? I put this under the category of terrible example. And then you do malacha because Beis Din ruled today was Sunday. So Correct. So that's also not going to be a good example. A good example where Beis Din has a halachic decision that it needs to make. Beis Din arrives at a halachic conclusion, and then after further review, they say no. Right? They sorry for the bad sports reference, but after instant replay, they looked at it again, and they said no, we were wrong. We want to reconsider. So if you do something because Beis Din allowed it, so then you don't have to bring a carbon. So the Gemara says that's what our Mishnah taught us. Our Mishnah taught us that if the woman slept with another man, but Beis Din said it was okay, so then her husband comes back. So again, obviously Beis Din ruled incorrectly, but you don't have to bring a carbon because what you did was under the jurisdiction of Beis Din. That's so far what the Mishnah says. Under certain circumstances, you are correct. Beis Din's requirement to bring a carbon, right? That's a mesechta called Horios, right? Which we did. And under certain circumstances, you're right. In this particular case, if one person behaves on account of the ruling of Beis Din, so then no. The par halam davret shel tzibur is only if the majority of the Jewish community do as a result of the psak of Beis Din. You're not wrong, but in this case, no, they don't have to bring a carbon. So Amar Ziri. So we are in the Gemara. We're starting now at the two dots. So Leisam Lafsisam Inini Be Midrasha. So Ziri makes a very bold statement. He says, we don't hold of our Mishnah. Okay? In other words, I know the Mishnah says she's exempt from a carbon. I don't think she's exempt. I think she's obligated. Why? Because of the following that was taught in a base medrash. The Nibbei Medrash was taught in the base medrash. Horu Beis Din Sheshaka Chama. Ulevesov Zarcha. Let's say Beis Din said the sun set. Okay, this should sound familiar. I kind of foreshadowed this Gemara with my bad example. What did Beis Din say? Shabbos is over. And why did Beis Din say that? Because it's pretty dark. In other words, it's Shabbos afternoon, late Shabbos afternoon, and it's right. It's really cloudy and it's really dark. And they said, okay, Shabbos is over. And then Uvasof Zarcha. And then afterwards, lo and behold, cloud scattered, sun appeared, Shabbos is not over. Ein zehora'a elataos. That's not a psak of Beis Din. That's called Beis Din are human and they made a mistake. But you are not going to be exempt from a carbon because your exemption from a carbon is only as a result of a psak of Beis Din. This is not a psak. This is just simply an erroneous conclusion made by a couple of very good intentioned older men. So and you have to bring a carbon. And what the Gemara over here is not suggesting, but saying, Ziri is saying is, if you go back to our Mishnah, it's same thing is true with our Mishnah. What did that Beis Din say? That Beis Din said to her, your husband's dead, okay, go ahead and get married again. And what happens? Her husband comes back. What does that mean Beis Din did? Made a mistake. But it's not a psak, it's a tos. And therefore the woman has to bring a carbon. This is Ziri. Now in general, we don't side with a braisa over that of a Mishnah, which is what Ziri just did. Meaning, in general, we generally put Mishnayos above braisos. So Ziri is making a very bold statement by saying that I'm rejecting the Mishnah on account of the braisa. Okay, but that's what he's saying.
Is this right. In the case of one witness or two witnesses, it doesn't matter.
In this particular case, it's one witness because it's Horaz. In the context of the Mishnah, it's Horaz Beis Din. So you need Beis Din. So it means there's one witness. But ostensibly wouldn't matter. I'd have to think about that more, but ostensibly wouldn't matter. Rav Nachman Amar Harayi, and Rav Nachman disagrees. Rav Nachman says, no, I'm going with our Mishnah. That was a Horah, that was a Psak. I'm Rav Nachman Teda da Harayi. Now Rav Nachman says here, and let me make my argument. And basically what we're going to do over the next five lines of Gemara is that we're going to try to wrap our heads around, it's a very hard concept. What is a mistake versus what's a Psak? Right, what's a ruling versus what's a mistake? So the Gemara says, "Debcholatur kulayda chalam mehemen v'acham mehemen." So over here, look, we don't generally take one witness as credibility, and here we do. My time alamishem darahi. So in other words, it must be that the one witness is serving as a witness, and this is a psak. And Danny, essentially, the Gemara is basically making your point. Meaning that if two witnesses were to come, what do we call that? That's a ruling. Meaning Beis Din has its normal avenue of how it operates, and one of the general rules of coming to conclusions is, two witnesses come, okay, we paskin, based on two witnesses. Here, one witness comes, I know generally we don't follow one witness, but here we do. Therefore, they passed him. So, Amar Rava Teda de Taos. Okay, so I'm sorry. So that's Rav Nachman making his argument that it's hara. It falls under the category of hara, and therefore, consequently, you have to bring a carbon. Sorry. And therefore, she would be exempt from a carbon because her action is done based on Beis Din. Fine. Amar Rava Teda de Taos. Rava says, no, I'm gonna take the other side. This is not a ruling, this is a mistake. The ilu hara beisim bechelav of adam lahetera v'hadur chazu taima liyisura. So the Gemara says here. Let's, and again, what the Gemara is going to try to do is communicate to us what's the ruling versus what's the mistake. So Rebbe says, look, let's say there's either forbidden fat or there's blood. Dilu hara beisim bechelav adam lahetera. Let's say beisim takes a first look at it and says, you know what? Based on arguments that we're presenting, the Gemara doesn't go through the arguments right now, but Let's just speak in very conceptual terms. There's an argument. And the argument right now is that that chaylev, that forbidden fat, that dam, that blood is mutter. V'hadur chazur taim li'isura. And then afterwards, they rethought about it some more, and they came up with an argument, and they argued, no, it's asur. So in other words, based on flip-flop. They thought first said that was mutter, and then they said it was asur. Ki hadri v'amri la'etera, lo mishkechinan lo. Now, let's say on a third try, they said, you know what, we're going to go back to the position of heter. In other words, we think it's heter. So, lo mishkechinan luhu. Or if you take a look at Rashi's Girsa, it's lo mishkechinan buhu. Sorry, I'm looking for the Rashi. Okay, sorry. I'll come back. We'll come back. So we don't listen to them. So the ilu hecha and okay. Let's try to clarify this. Why don't we listen to Beis Din? Again, Beis Din first said that the chelav was mutter. Then the Beis Din said chelav was us, and then Beis Din came back to the position that the chelav is mutter. And on that third turn, we don't listen to Beis Din. And why not? Meaning, what's wrong with that third turn? Because basically in that third turn, nothing new was formulated. Meaning if Basin, all they're going to do is just simply go back to their first argument, well, the first argument that they gave, they already rejected. In other words, if you have an argument and you rejected that argument, that's it. Meaning you rejected that argument. That third turn, they went from Heter to Isser, back to Heter. If all we're doing in that third Heter is just simply reviewing and revisiting the same argument that they already rejected, so the Gemara says, we're not going to... That's something that the people don't have to listen to. So my time allowed Misham to Tosu. So the Gemara says, but over here, however, it's not going to be that way. Over here, what happens? One witness comes says that the husband's dead. Okay, husband's dead. She goes and gets married. Two witnesses come and say, what are you talking about? He's not dead, right? After you testified, we saw him. He was alive, he was well. So now, obviously, we have to revisit it because we have new information. And what if we had another witness come, right? In this particular case, a fourth person come and say, your husband's dead. So now what? So now we're going to have to revisit it again. Meaning that that third round of testimony, right, which is represented by one person. So over here, what is he doing? He's providing us new information. In other words, a hora means that there's no new information. We just have arguments going back and forth. Taos means we're actually provided with new information. Hey, let's go back to the case of Shabbos for just a moment. Right, Beis Din said Shabbos is over. Right? Why is Shabbos over? Because it's dark. Then what happens? Clouds scatter and the sun comes out. Now what we have is new information. So Beis Din, obviously, when they gave the previous psak, they were basing it on old information and wrong information. Now they have new information. Okay, now they're going to rule. So that's not a hora'ah. That's a toast. What Rav is arguing is the same thing is true over here. When it comes to a woman who, where witnesses come and said your husband's dead, or a witness comes and said your husband is dead, so, and then she remarries based on that. Look, that wasn't a hora'ah, because if we subsequently find out that her husband's alive, what does it say about the old information? It was wrong information. That's not a hora, that's a toos. Masha'en came when it comes to chaylev. Basin said it was us. It was mutter. Then Basin says it was us. Then Basin says it was mutter. There, nothing changed. The facts didn't change. It's just that Basin was going from swinging from one argument to another argument. So that's a hora, that's a ruling. Good. So, okay, so that's the Gemara's attempt to explain to us. I mean, the Gemara did a good job, was just for us now to try to figure out whether or not this falls under the category of Tos or this falls under the category of Hara. So again, our Mishnah says it falls under the category of Hara, and Ziri and the Braisa and Rava all say that it falls under the category of Tos.
But the two witnesses could be wrong in the second go around.
They absolutely could. In other words, everyone has the potential of being wrong. But when those two witnesses come in, what they're doing is providing for us new information. It calls into question the information that we've been working with up until this point in time. That means then that what Beis Din did is a taos because they were operating with the information that was wrong. That's called taos. The Af Rabbi Eliezer Sefer Tatosu Detanya Rabbi Lazar Amar Yikavad Din Esahar V'Tavich Hatashmeina. And Rabbi Eliezer also puts us under the category of Taos. Why? Because look at the statement to Rabbi Eliezer. He says that what you do is you put a hole through the mountain, right? In other words, if you want to get through a mountain, you can go over the mountain, you can go around the mountain, and sometimes you bore a hole right through the mountain. Okay, it's called the tunnel. So Yikov Adin is a harvitavi chata shmena, and you have to bring a really fat chatas. Okay, a little hyperbolic in terms of the kind of chatas you have to bring, but the point he's making is investigate this matter clearly, and you have to bring echat shmeina. Now, what is Rabbi Eliezer saying? What he's saying is that we know that Beis Din allowed to get married based on the testimony of one witness. But you know what? Though, if the husband walks back in and the husband's alive, what does that say regarding Beis Din? They were wrong. Okay, fine, obviously, but it's a taos. It was a mistake. And why? Because Mishum Hachim Masi Karban. Because look what Rabbi Eliezer says. Rabbi Eliezer says you have to got to bring a karban. If that was a ruling of Beis Din, so then you're exempt from a karban. The fact that you have to bring a karban means it was a toast. Eliyah Mardar Raya My Masi Karban. V'dimukas of Rabbi Eliezer Yachishal Sabaraz Beis Din Chayev. Now the Gemara makes the suggestion. Maybe it is a hora, and Rabbi Eliezer happens to be of the opinion that if one person does something based on the hora of Beis Din, so then there's a requirement to bring a karban, which is an opinion in the Masechta of Horios. But the Gemara says, but that doesn't apply over here. The Gemara says, Imke Mayikov Adin Asahar, because that doesn't fit into the language of Rabbi Eliezer. Rabbi Eliezer says, here's what you do. You see that big mountain? Bore a hole right through it. What does that mean, bore a hole right through it? Investigate the matter. Meaning, look deeply into this matter. What happened? One man reported that her husband's dead. She remarried based on that. Her husband walks back. So in other words, what she did not do is she didn't investigate. She wasn't as careful as she possibly could in order to make sure that her husband was in fact dead, which is one of the responsibilities of the woman, is to corroborate and make sure to the best of her ability that her husband's dead, and she didn't. And so what does that mean? So that means that what based an issue for her was not a psak, but just based on the information that was given, here's what you could do. But that's not a hora, that's a toast. And as a result of that, consequently, if her husband walks back in, falls under the category of toast, and therefore, says Rabbi Eliezer, she needs to bring a karman chatas.
We were talking a moment ago about witnesses seeing that her husband not walking back and coming back. He was seen. Isn't that two different things?
No. Over here we're talking, in other words, the case under the discussion is where... I understand. Previously, all they were doing previously was just trying to explain what the difference between Tos and Arad. The case in question over here is her husband's standing right here. In other words, he came back.
The witness is saying, we saw him draw, that isn't going to hold.
If witnesses came and said that we saw him abroad, contradicting the first witnesses, so then now she's in a state of, I don't know what the story with her husband is. That's what's called Eidim Amachisha. They contest one another. The case in question, however, which we're dealing with, which we're going back to the Mishnah, is a case where the husband actually comes back. And the question on the table is, in other words, she has to... It's okay. She has to go. She clearly has to leave her husband and go. And whether or not she can return back to her original husband, good. That was up for discussion. The issue over here is that she has to bring a carbon chatas. So the Gemara is now arguing back and forth on whether or not what Beis Din did is issue a ruling, which means that it exempt her from bringing a chatas, or no. This falls under the category of toast. Beis Din was under false information. And then she'd have to bring a carbon chatas. That's the issue. And now, on the side that she has to bring a carbon chatas, let's just collect everyone together in terms of Tanaim and Amarayim. Rabbi Eliezer, Ziri, Rava, a number of the Amarayim and Tanaim say that she has to bring a carbon chatas. Hadi, the Rambam as well. The Rambam says that she has to bring a carbon chatas, meaning this falls under the category of toast, not of that of Hora'ah. Okay. Hora basically not say. Okay, and then the last case in the Mishnah, and with this we're going to finally conclude the Mishnah. It's been a long time on this Mishnah. Then the Mishnah says, let's say Basin offered her a license. Hora basically not say. Again, one witness came and said, her husband's dead. Fine. And Basin said, good. Young lady, okay, again, it's a tragedy. Not lose sight of the fact that it's a tragedy. It's a tragedy, but now you have permission to go and get married. And what does she do? So the Mishnah says, very ambiguously, or not ambiguous, just vague, the Mishnah says, Hachala v'kilkala. She does something bad. Meaning, now that she has permission to go and get married, she does something wrong. What exactly does that mean? Well, we're gonna discuss in just a moment. But the Mishnah then says, "Chayevus b'karban." She has to bring a karban. She's obligated to bring a karban. Shalomi to her, Eli Nasei. Basin only said what to her? You can get married, but you can't behave in an inappropriate way. Now, what exactly is the inappropriate way? So that's what we're about to discuss. My kilkala. What did she do wrong? So Rebbe Lazar Omer Zinsa. Rebbe Lazar says that she had premarital relations with another man. Okay. Rav Yochanan Amar Aman al Kohen Gadol Grusha v'chlutz the Kohen Hajo. And Rav Yochanan says no. She got into another marriage, but unlawfully, an illicit marriage. She was a grusha. She married a Kohen. She was an almana. She married the Kohen Gadol. So Aman Amar Zinsa Kol Shekein Aman al Kohen Gadol. Now, if you say that promiscuity, meaning she just had premarital relations with another man, if that is kilkala, so for sure, Grusha v'chalutza, where she's violating a law in the Torah, so for sure that would be that would also be kilkala, and she'd have to bring a carbon. My time the amra asonu deshavisa pnuya. Now, if you take Rav Yochanan's position, which is that kilkala is only when she violates a law in the Torah, premarital relations bitul asay, meaning she's violating a positive commandment of having relations not under the canopy, under the umbrella of marriage, but what the Gemara is arguing is like this. Look, what's Beis Din saying to me? Beis Din is saying to me, I'm no longer a married woman. The Gemara is not, can I be as clear as possible? The Gemara is not condoning or endorsing or even promoting premarital relations. But the fact of the matter is that what Beis Din ruled is, you're no longer married. So for her to have premarital relations, it's not kilkala. It doesn't fall under the category of she really made a mess out of everything. Obviously, she behaved in a very promiscuous fashion. She was mevatel mitzvah saseh of marriage. But the Gemara says, but that's not kilkala. So the Gemara says, the shavisa penuy, tani kavasi de Rav Yochanan. The Gemara quotes the Brisa supporting Rav Yochanan, or Beis Din leaves Nasiv Achav Kilkala. Beis Din gave her a license to get married again, and she ruins it. And how does she ruin it? Look what the example is given by the Brisa. Gigon. Aman al Kohen Gadol Grusha v'chalutz the Kohen Edge Chayeves beKarbon. Al Kol Biu Bia Diver Rebbe Lazar. So she has to bring a carbon, and according to Rebbe Lazar, she has to bring a carbon for every act of relations that she has with this man, because Beis Din didn't give her license to do that, to marry somebody who the Torah prohibits. So she has to bring a carbon on every one of those acts. Now, every one of those acts of Bia that happens to be, as Rashi points out over here, Rabbi Elazar Lishitas, Rabbi Elazar says that you have to bring a carbon chatas for every single Bia. V'chachamim amrim carbon echad ala kol. And the chachamim say, no, one carbon. Okay, but let's not get lost in the minutia. The point is that the example given in the Brisa is what? She was a grusha marrying a Kohen. That Beis Din did not give her license to do. And then, but the Chachamim will agree that if she goes and marries five different men, obviously not concurrently, If she may, she can't. If she marries five different men, she'd have to bring a carbon for every one of those men. Because they're gufa machlokim, they divide the carbon chattas. Meaning, every man is going to warrant its own carbon chattas. But again, the point being is that what Beis Din, even though she does have license and permission from Beis Din to get married, but not to violate an Issur Torah like Grusha to Kohen and Naman to Kohen Gadol. And if she does that, she's going to have to bring a carbon chatas for those actions. But clearly what the Bryce is doing is not accepting the pshat offered by Rebbe Lazar the Amora, who says that even if she's mezani, even if she has relations outside of marriage, she has to bring a carbon chatas for that. She doesn't have to bring a carbon chatas for that because all she's doing is following through with the psak of Beis Din. Beis Din told her that she's no longer a married woman.
So the psak is rescinded with her behavior? Is that what that is?
It's something along those lines. How exactly to formulate it?
I hear you.
I understand that. Just to challenge you just a little bit. Well, shouldn't she also get a divorce? Or maybe that point is obvious. Right. I mean, in other words, the Mishnah is focusing on her requirement to bring a carbon.
Right,
right, right. Okay, on that part I'm unclear about. But I hear you, Danny, you're making sense. I'm not, you know, not going to disagree. Just curious that the Mishnah doesn't talk about the status of her marriage. Next Mishnah.
Is
Right, that's the unknown. I don't know. Okay, next Mishnah. Isha Shalach Balo Vanala Medina Sayam. Okay, Mishnah over here now. This is the second Mishnah in the 10th parak. We've been in the 10th parak for a while. It goes all the way back to Daf Pei Zayin. But now the Mishnah over here is going to continue with more cases about husband going overseas and she receiving reports. This Mishnah is going to be tragic. Okay, just setting the tone for the Mishnah. It's going to be a lot of tragedies, but we're going to look at it as clinically as possible as we are going to surmise what the halacha would be. Haisha shalach bala ubanah l'medina sayam. So her husband went away together with her son, and they went abroad. Ubal v'amrla meis balech v'akach meis benech. And then the report comes back that her husband and the son die, and the report is in a specific order. First the husband dies, and then the son dies. Okay, now, in that particular order, let's assume, of course, this is her only son. So that because obviously we're looking at the Yibum ramification. And so first the husband dies, then the son dies. So is there a Zika? Is she bound to the mitzvah of Yibum? The answer is no. Because first the husband died, and he did not die childless. He died with a child. Now the child happened to have died subsequent to that. But as we discussed just a short week ago in the Daf, in the world of Yibum, as long as there was a child after the death, it doesn't matter if the child survives or does not survive. So then there's an exemption from the mitzvah of Yibum. So now what does she think? She thinks, okay, now there's no Zika, and I'm free to marry, based on the report. And then they say to her, okay, everything we said is right except for one small detail, and it's not a small detail. The order in death. It was not first the husband, then the son. It was first the son, then the husband. Okay, and that really now creates a significant problem, because now what that means is that the husband did in fact die childless. That now that means that there's a mitzvah of Yibum. That means she has a Zika, she is bound to her brother-in-law, and that means that she cannot marry any other man. This is what's called Yevama Lashuk. And she cannot marry another man. So Teitze v'havlad rishon v'acharon mamzer. So she has to get a divorce now from her husband, and the child and the subsequent child that she produced is going to be a mamzer. Now think this through just a little bit. In the Mishnah identifying that child as a mamzer, that is hard to understand, that child being a mamzer. Yevama l'shuk, meaning she has a mitzvah zibum. She didn't know at the time. But the fact is that she had a mitzvah zibum, she had a zika, she had relations with another man, she married another man, at least she thought it was a valid marriage, and she fathered. She had a child together with that other man. So the Mishnah says that child has a mamzer. At worst, which is what we're looking at over here, she's violating a law in the Torah. The Torah says that she a yevama cannot be with another man. So it's a lav. It's a negative prohibition. The child should not be a mamzer. What the Gemara is going to tell us is that our Mishnah subscribing, figured it out, our Mishnah subscribing to the viewpoint of Rabbi Akiva, and that's why our Mishnah rules as a mamzer. Meaning, but if you're following me along this path, with the halach is that the child is not a mamzer. Meaning, we don't agree with the opinion of Rabbi Akiva. We say that the child is not a mamzer, but in terms of the Mishnah is subscribing to the viewpoint of Rabbi Akiva. Amar lo meis benech v'akach meis balech. Let's go now. Let's do the same case again, but in the reverse order. The report was that first the child died, then the father died. Vinis yavma. Now she thinks that there's a mitzvah of yibam, and she does yibam with her brother-in-law. And then another report comes back to her, and the second report is everything we said was right except for the order. It was first the child, then the husband. Sorry. It was first the husband, then the child. So now she needs to get a divorce from her brother-in-law. There's no mitzvah of yibam, and the child is a mamzer. And on this case in the Mishnah, we're going to agree. Meaning we, the halacha, are going to agree that the child is in fact a mamzer. Because for her to have relations with her brother-in-law, that's a rayus. That's an erev in the Torah. And there was no mitzvah of yibam, so it wasn't b'makom mitzvah. And so therefore the child is a mamzer.
But the thing is, they did it was for a mitzvah purpose. It's later it was very clear. So
okay, so it was a mistake. Okay.
It's
a good question. I'm gonna bypass the question right now. The point the Mishnah is trying to bear out is that once the information is corrected, and she, even though she went on what she was, once thought was correct information, it doesn't matter. We're going to go on the corrected information. Your question's good. I'm just going to focus on what the Mishnah is trying to communicate. Third case in the Mishnah deals with the following. The report is that the husband died. She gets married. And afterwards, she got a new report. And that is, at the time of your marriage, when you originally got married, your husband was not alive. Sorry, your husband was not dead. He was alive. And then only subsequently did he die. Teitzev avlad rishon mamzer, v'acharon eino mamzer. So now, the child she bore in the interim, meaning when she erroneously assumed that her husband was dead, so that child is going to be a mamzer, because what she's doing is, while being a married woman, she's sleeping with another man and having a child with that other man. That child is a mamzer. After the updated report that her husband is in fact dead, so now any child that she has after that, subsequent to that, is not going to be a mamzer. Amrullah Mez Balech Vinis Kacha Vachakach Babala. Fourth case in the Mishnah is where the report is that the husband died. She accepted Kedushin from another man, but it didn't go beyond the point of Kedushin. Her husband comes back with Tarsach Solo. She can go back to her original husband. So of the four cases, only one of them does not end in a tragedy. And let's say that second man gives her a get. What is that get regarded in halacha? As a piece of paper. It's nothing. It has no bearing whatsoever. Because even though he was Mekadisher, but he was Mekadisher a married woman, doing Kedushin to a married woman has no effectiveness whatsoever. And if he gives her a get, that also is going to have zero effectiveness whatsoever. She will not be disqualified from Kohen. Al-Zeh, just finishing up the Mishnah.
You want to be a
Zonu, then?
No.
Now, give me a moment. When is a woman disqualified from a kohen? When she receives a divorce from her husband. Here, it's not her husband. And so therefore she's not disqualified from a kohen. Now, Phil, to your question of Zona, no. In other words, she only accepted kedushin from another man.
Another.
Right, she didn't have relation with that other man. She's not going to be a Zona. Okay. And this is a big deal in the Mishnah, meaning this last case in the Mishnah? Yeah, sure, it's a big deal. When we go through Gittin, we're going to see a number of times that there's something called the Reach HaGet. Mm-hmm. Right? Something which smells of a get, meaning that the Mishnah in Gittin, I know it sounds a funny term, but the Mishnah in Gittin goes over a number of cases where the get is invalid, but if it still reeks of a get, and it will disqualify her from a kohen. The point our Mishnah is making over here is that if a man who is not married to her hands her a piece of paper and it looks like a get, and you know, you could even make the argument it smells like a get, Again, I know it's a funny statement, but nevertheless, it's nothing. It has no bearing whatsoever. Only a get that's given to her by her husband is only going to have ramifications for her ability, or in this case, inability to marry Cohen. We're in the Gemara. My Rishon, my Achron. Ile my Rishon, lifnei Shmo, v'achron l'achr Shmo, lifnei Avlad Mamzer. In the first case of the Mishnah, again, the first case of the Mishnah, reports of her husband and her son dying, it's just a question of who died first. So why not just simply say the Vlad is a Mamzer? Why are we using terms Rishon and Achron? So the Gemara says, I'll tell you why, and it's a standard answer of the Gemara. Vishim de Kabay lemisne sefer amrula meis balech v'nises v'achakach amrulay kayim haya umeis arishon. I'm sorry, umeis arishon mamzer v'achron eno mamzer. Tani nami rishon, resha arishon v'achron mamzer. Gemara says, for purposes of symmetry, remember the Mishnayos used to be committed to memory. They should be committed to memory. It's our fault that we don't commit them to memory, but they should be. And for purposes of poetry, of symmetry, of making the Mishnayos easier to commit to memory, so sometimes the Mishnah is going to use a signon, a format that'll make it easier to commit to memory. That's why in the ratio of the Mishnah we use terms Rishon and Achron, even though they're really not applicable in the ratio of the Mishnah. Okay. Tanu Rabbanan. Zu divrei Rabbi Akiva shehaya omer kiddushin tovsin b'chayv elavna v'chacham omer mim'ein mamzer miyavama. Okay, so the Gemara now makes a point which we already made back in the Mishnah, which is that that first case in the Mishnah, she was a Yavama. She didn't know it at the time because her first piece of information she was given led her to believe that she was not a Yavama. Her first piece of information is that first the husband died, then her son died, so she's Muteres Lashuk. And then with the corrected information, it turns out that she was a Yavama with the Zika. And what did she do? She married somebody else. So that's Yavama Lashuk. And what the Mishnah say? The child is a Mamzer. So the Gemara now just simply points out that's Rabbi Kiva's opinion. We say, like the Chachamim, that the child is not a Mamzer because for a violation of love, the child is not a Mamzer. V'leima, a Mamzer mechai v'lavin. So the Gemara says, why not just simply say that there's no Mamzer from chai v'lavin? Why do the Brice have to go out of its way to say, Zu div Rabbi Kiva? Excuse me. So, Haytana Hachtana the Rabbi Kiva Udamer Mechayv Elavin De She'er Havei Mamzer Mechayv Elavin Great Elo Havei Mamzer. So the Gemara says, go back to a time in Yavamos Daf Mem Tes, where we had a lengthy exposition over there in the Gemara regarding where does Rabbi Kiva where is Rabbi Kiva gonna produce a Mamzer? Is it a standard love, or does it have to be a love with a relationship aspect to it? So the Gemara just simply points out that our Brice over here assumes the latter. That this particular Brice is working with the assumption that for Rabbi Kiva, only a love that is family connected, She'er, is going to produce a Mamzer. Amar Rav Yehuda Amar Rav. We're now on the top of Tzadi Beis, I'm in Beis. Minayin shein kedushin tovsin b'yavama. Here we go now with a discussion of the Gemara. Should sound familiar. It is because we did this earlier in the Masechta, way earlier in the Masechta. We're going to do it again later in the Masechta, and we're doing it again right now. And that is Yavama L'shuk. It's a lav. The Torah says that the woman who has a Zika who is connected to her brother-in-law, so she cannot go marry somebody else. The pasuk is, the Gemara is about to quote in just a moment, Losia Eishes Hameis Hachutza. She cannot go and marry another man. It's what we, right, Hameis Hachutza Leishzar. We call this, in Gemara terminology, we call this Yavama Lashuk. A Yavama cannot go into the marketplace and marry another man. Okay. It's alive in the Torah, meaning the Torah, the pasuk, right in front of us. Losia, it's alive in the Torah. So again, if you were Rabbi Akiva, you would say right away, there's no Tfisas Kedushin. If you're the Chachamim, would there be Tfisas Kedushin? The answer would presumably be, sure. The Gemara now is about to have a debate on this very issue. Minayin shein Kedushin Tovsin B'Yavama. So Rav is of the opinion that there is no Tfisas Kedushin. Now the Gemara does not make this super clear, but it certainly seems like what Rav and Shmuel are about to argue is within the Shita of the Chachamim. Meaning, according to Rabbi Kiva, it would apparently be a no-brainer that there's no tfisas kedushin, it's a lav. And Rabbi Akiva says that by any lav, there's not going to be any tfisas kedushin. It sounds like Rav and Shmuel are arguing within the sheet of the Chachamim. That's what it sounds like. Okay? Tosfos, if you want more on this discussion of who they're arguing within, you can see the Tosfos on Sadi Beis, the Tosfos Amarav. Okay. Minayin shein kedushin tofsin biyavamash and emar lo siya eishat nameis hachutz lizar lo sehebo havaya lizar. The way Rav understands the pasuk, you know what the pasuk is telling us? Not that it's a negative prohibition, it can't happen. It just simply won't work. Shmuel amar ani yusenu tzricha get mi tzricha get. Shmuel says we're poor, we're impoverished. He does not mean financially. It means that we have a deficient understanding of the pasuk. We don't understand the pasuk that well. We don't know misafkel elishmuel hi lo siyashus amesi lalav hudasa idelo tafse pe kedushin hudasa. You know what Shmuel doesn't know? He doesn't know whether or not the Torah over here is telling us a reality, or it's telling us just a negative prohibition. It's if Rav is convinced that the Torah is telling us a reality. The reality is she can't accept kedushin from somebody else. It won't work. Shmuel says, I don't know. I just simply don't know. Either maybe telling us a reality, or it's telling us, no, it'll work, and she's violating a negative prohibition. And as a result of that, Shmuel says, you know what we should do? She should receive a get from that second man. Because we don't know. Amalei Rav Mari Barach LeRav Ashi Hachi Amar Meimar Lach Kavasi DeShmuel. The Gemara says a halacha sarzek Shmuel. This is unusual. Generally speaking, when there's a machlokas between Rav and Shmuel, and it relates to Isurim in the Torah, we normally follow like Rav. And a Meimar says a halacha sarzek Shmuel. Amar Rav Ashi Hashad Amar Meimar Lach Kavasi DeShmuel. Im Haya Yivama Kohen. So let's say the Yivama was a Kohen. Cholates La. I'm sorry, Im Haya Yavama Kohen, if the marriage was to a Kohen, so Cholitz Lavishayala. So the Gemara says, so she'll do Chalitza and she will be permitted. So Idguri Itgar, Im Ke Masina Chotin Itgar, the Gemara says, no, can't be. You're gonna reward that behavior, meaning it's something she shouldn't have done. And now you're gonna help her remain married to the Kohen. Im Haya Yavama Yisrael, the Gemara says, okay. If the Yavama was Yisrael, no sin la sheni get vuhutra lo. So the Gemara says that then if she receives kedushin from somebody else, she can receive a get from that person and she will be permitted. Amrav Gidol Amrav Chia Bar Yosef Amrav Yevama Kedushin Ein Ba Nisuin Yeshba. Gemara makes a statement which at first glance is impossible to understand, which is that, you know, there's no Kedushin, but there's Nisuin. The Gemara says, what does that mean? A Kedushin Ein Ba Nisuin Nami Ein Ba. Can't possibly mean anything. Meaning if there's no Kedushin, there's no Nisuin. Ein Ba Kedushin Nisuin Ein Ba. No, that what he meant, of course, is that there's neither. There's no Kedushin, there's no Nisuin. And obviously, that subscribes to the viewpoint of Rav. So the Gemara says no. It means that there's nesuin in that there's zuzka derav hamnun damer hamnumna shomeres yavam shezinsa. If a shomeres yavam, meaning she's awaiting the mitzvah of yibum, and she commits a znus, an act of znus asura liyivama, she's not prohibited to her yavam. Or the Gemara says like this, no, really there is no Kedushin, like Rav said, but if she does Nisuin, we're concerned about the impression that it makes, and therefore a get is required. Even though in actuality they're not married, no different than like the case that we saw in the beginning of the 10th parak. Just to conclude the halacha, Amar Rav Yana b'chavru nimru v'gamru ein kedushin tofsin biyavama. So the Gemara says that there is no kedushin which is tofes by a yavama, meaning a yavama accepts kedushin from somebody else. There's no tfisas kedushin. The Gemara says the halacha is like Rav. If you are confused in terms of what the halacha is like, you should be. The Gemara has a machlokes between Rav and Shmuel. The Gemara says the halacha a meimer pasuk halacha like Shmuel. The Gemara just said that the halacha follows like Rav, whether or not a yavama who accepts kedushin from somebody else is in fact tofes. So what's the halacha? So tomorrow I'll give you a full report in terms of where the posts come in on this matter.